From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on September 27, 2018, during the confirmation hearings for Judge Brett Kavanaugh. President Donald Trump had nominated Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court. A former classmate of Kavanaugh's, Christine Blasey Ford, had accused the judge of sexually assaulting her during a party back in the 1980s. Judge Kavanaugh denied this, and the hearings focused heavily on his behavior, the allegations, and his drinking. There was one Democratic senator whose questioning of Kavanaugh stood out. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar had been a prosecutor, and instead of grandstanding during her time for questioning, she probed the judge with direct and careful questions. Klobuchar explained that her own father was an alcoholic, and she wanted to know if the judge had ever blacked out from drinking too much. Kavanaugh did not like that question, and he mockingly shot back, "Well, have you?" Klobuchar stayed on task, not ruffled, and politely directed him to answer the question. After the hearings, even some Republicans pointed to Amy Klobuchar's questions as tough but fair, and in the weeks that followed, she would become a prominent name as a potential presidential candidate. She would launch her campaign during a heavy Minnesota snowstorm, but it has taken a while for her campaign to catch on with the Democratic electorate. She has stagnated in national polling, and finally, in just the past 2 weeks, Klobuchar's name has risen through the remaining contenders as a possible centrist candidate who might be able to unite the party and take on President Trump. After polling in the single digits for months, Klobuchar came in a strong third in New Hampshire, earning 20% of the vote this week. Now she's trying to leverage that finish as a launching pad, with an eye on Super Tuesday and a belief that Democratic voters are narrowing the field and want a moderate candidate. Can it work? And is there enough time? And for Klobuchar's biggest local supporters, what are the issues that animate their support for her? We've had the opportunity in recent months to talk to supporters and reps from different campaigns. This is our first real look at the issues and substance of Senator Amy Klobuchar. Joining us now in studio, welcome to Jackie Billings, who is not only a Klobuchar supporter, but a restaurant entrepreneur and a trustee of the Village of Perry. Thanks for making the trip in.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Patty Kapteen, who's a Klobuchar supporter here in Rochester. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Dr. Gail Siegel is here. Dr. Siegel is a SUNY Buffalo Research Lab director and a founding member of the nonpartisan Rochester March for Science. We were joking before the program. Let's make sure that people know that your work in that way is not at all partisan.
Exactly.
Fair enough?
Yes, thanks. Great to be here.
Thanks for being here. Gail, for you, just briefly,
okay.
I'm going to ask all of you kind of right off the top, what is currently animating your support? And then we're going to kind of get specific on the issues, but why Amy Klobuchar right now?
Well, you know, I was very hesitant to land on any one candidate for quite a while because I was a very strong Hillary Clinton supporter in 08 and 2016, and we saw what happened there. But, you know, I've been watching the debates, I've been following the coverage, and the more and more, I think she's won me over time. And so, she's my number one choice right now. You know, I think she's got the grit. I think she can stand up to Trump. I think she can, you know, bring people together from diverse backgrounds. And, I really think that she could do well.
Okay. Jackie Billings?
Yeah, same. I've taken some time to come to this decision. Really, it's a good set of candidates. So I'm kind of happy with all of them, possibly, maybe most of them. But it occurred to me during the Iowa caucus that, you know, voters were really struggling with picking the right person that could be elected and succeed in this election. And it occurred to me, you know, voters really need to think about who appeals to them. You know, Amy's district, where Amy's elected, looks a lot like where I'm from, heavy Republican area. I'm a moderate voice. I like a moderate voice. And I've watched her and listened to her, and I think that she could do it.
What does a moderate voice mean? How do you define that?
Well, being willing to hear both sides of an issue, being able to let a Republican's position be something that you can come around to, and let the more progressive element of the party be something that you reach balance on, you know, so that you're finding a middle path. I think most people prefer a middle path. I think that we're so polarized it just sucks all the oxygen out of the room.
Okay, Penny, what has animated your support for Amy Klobuchar?
Well, Amy garnered my support one debate at a time. Every time she was on the debate stage, she really stood out to me as being someone who could really address real issues, the economy, healthcare. She's moderate, she's pragmatic, and she has a tremendous amount of experience as a legislator and as a prosecutor before that.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about the recent debate last, I think, Friday night, leading into the New Hampshire primary as being one of the drivers of the late deciders in New Hampshire. We're going to listen to a couple of clips this hour. I want to get the take of our panel on sort of what kind of launch her into more national prominence. I want to listen to that interchange with Brett Kavanaugh. Now, this is during the Kavanaugh hearings in September of 2018, and she's essentially saying, she had already says, look, my father was an alcoholic. I'm familiar with heavy drinking, but I'm curious to know if you've ever blacked out from drinking. And he's essentially saying, look, you're getting some of your sourcing from my old college friends who are not always on the up and up, and some of them have an axe to grind, and this is how that exchange finished out.
Drinking is one thing.
And there's much more. Okay. Look at the redacted portion of what I said. I don't want to repeat
all
that
right.
in a public hearing.
I will. Could I just ask one more question?
Redacted information about that.
Okay, drinking is one thing, but the concern is about truthfulness. And in your written testimony, you said sometimes you had too many drinks. Was there ever a time when you drank so much that you couldn't remember what happened or part of what happened the night before?
No, I remember what happened. And I think you've probably had beers, Senator, and so.
So you're saying there's never been a case where you drank so much that you didn't remember what happened the night before or part of what happened?
You're asking about, blackout. I don't know. Have you?
Could you answer the question, Judge? That's not happened. Is that your answer?
Yeah, and I'm curious if you have.
I have no drinking problem, Judge.
Yeah, nor do I.
Okay, thank you.
Interestingly, after the break that day, Judge Kavanaugh apologized to Senator Klobuchar. And if you listen to that, I'm thinking, Jackie, of what you have talked about with this idea of polarization. That does not sound like sort of a typical set of questions. That doesn't sound like I'm going to get on cable news with a soundbite, I'm going to grandstand. That sounded like direct, fair questions and someone who frankly didn't want to answer them. What did you hear there?
I actually was watching that, and I was affronted in how disrespectful his answer was. And I was thinking, I was really trying to evaluate, listen and again, give benefit of the doubt to Kavanaugh, but also be open-minded. And I was taken aback by his disrespect to her as a senator. And I thought she handled it with such just skill. And I can't believe that she stayed so calm. And that really was a first moment for me, too, that I was like, hey, who is this woman?
Hmm. Patty, what did you hear there?
I very similar thoughts on that whole situation. That was the first time I even knew that she existed, was when I watched those hearings. And I was very impressed with her measured response, her steady reaction to him and getting him back on track. And I think that she really stood out as a questioner in that whole situation, that mm-hmm. hearing.
Yeah. Dr. Siegel?
Yeah, I was also really taken aback by the pushback that Kavanaugh gave her. And I agree. I think she handled it really well. And, that was sort of a good introduction to people who hadn't seen her before to see how she handles herself in those kind of settings.
She is in most ways, and I'm trying to sort of objectively analyze the whole field here, including President Trump. She's about the most unlike Donald Trump of anybody in the field. And that's not to say other Democrats are like him, but she seems to be such on an opposite track. She's not a celebrity. She doesn't seek to be a celebrity. She's not bombastic. And I think that clip sort of illustrates some of that. The question is, does the electorate want that? I mean, do you think right now, Dr. Siegel, that sort of the anti-Trump in terms of not a celebrity, not a reality show person, is right for the moment? Or does the party need someone who's a little bit more high wattage?
I'll tell you, I'm somebody out here. I want somebody who's going to give us back some normalcy. I'm tired of coming home from work and listening to the news and hearing what next outrage is going on. Someone who can come in, who sounds reasonable and rational, has good ideas, is strong, will, set things in the right way. And yeah, I'm tired of the outrages. I want a quiet news cycle. I don't want to be concerned, what happened today. And so I think she can bring us back to some normalcy.
Jackie, you're someone who's had to get elected as a Democrat in a very red area. So you have a sense for what might motivate people in a lot of different ways. Is this a moment where you sense an anti-celebrity is a good thing in national politics?
The question of celebrity, I'm not really sure. I think it works in rural areas as much as it can be a turnoff. Mm-hmm. But I do think that Klobuchar is somebody who can appeal to, especially across party lines, to people who, aren't comfortable with the direction that the party is at right now. And I've had conversations as yesterday with people that are like, I can vote for her.
With Republicans who
said
that.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm not saying all Republicans. I'm just saying this is what I do. I talk to people one-on-one. I want to understand, how they make their decisions. I want to be a good citizen, and I want to demonstrate how to be a good citizen, and listening is a huge part of that. And just yesterday, through having the conversation about this race, I had Republican in my who can vote for me say, I could vote for her.
Okay. Patty, what do you think?
Watching her on the debate stage, I think that even though she's a reasonable person and she certainly doesn't seek celebrity, she has shown that she's not afraid to be direct and to confront other people's positions and to stand her ground and what she believes in. So I think that she could, if she were to go up against Trump, for example, in the general election, I think she could hold her own and she would be fine.
Let me get our first phone call, and we're going to work through other positions that Amy Klobuchar holds as a senator and as a presidential candidate, some of the criticism of here. We'll get there, and we'll get more of your emails that have already come in, but let me get Quentin in Caledonia first. Go ahead, Quentin.
Well, thank you so much. I'm a new member. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. Thanks very much.
In addition to all the you've heard from your guests, I want to add another aspect, which is that the method of working of women in groups is much more consensus-oriented, and I think we need a consensus candidate who can work with different people. And I think I identified her as a good person a few months ago. I dropped my interest in Warren and switched to Amy. Thank you so much. Catch you later.
Yeah, thanks, Quentin. So it's interesting, a wide range of feedback already on this. One thing I definitely notice is people are much more tuned in now than they would have been a month or 2 months ago. People are aware of Senator Klobuchar. And so here's Steve and Henrietta with sort of a different take. He says, I'm a Democrat who will support any Democrat in November. That being said, in the spirit of vetting, not trashing, let me mention two reservations I have about Amy. He says, number one, she's been tepid on LGBTQ issues, far better than Trump, but not super impressive. And number two, he writes, quote, one has to be careful with this one, but she does have the reputation for being, for the lack of better term, a boss from hell. Of course, there is a real double standard for how women are treated when they are in charge. But I wonder if it's worth looking further into those allegations that seem like they might go beyond simply being a tough boss. If it is true that she has humiliated staffers in unnecessary ways, does that have implications about her character? That said, I will support her if she wins, Steve and Henrietta. Okay, so Steve is pointing out something that really a year ago and maybe 6-9 months ago was more in the news. She has, I think, the highest or the second highest turnover rate of staff in the U.S. Senate, which means people quit when they work for her pretty fast. The specific stories shared about her are rough, and they are rough beyond just being demanding. Yes, there have been times where staff have alleged that she has intentionally humiliated staffers for small mistakes. She has essentially apologized and said she considers herself to be a perfectionist and has very high standards and she expects that of her staff. Steve, I take your point on two things. I think it's fair to ask that question while also pointing out that definitely women are held to a different standard with that stuff. So I think you can do both, but I think we have to be mindful of that context, and I'll ask our guests what they think. Dr. Siegel, does that worry you?
Well, you know, I think all of the candidates are going to be vetted, and everything they've done over their lifetime, over their careers, is going to come out. Some of it's not so pretty, and everyone's made mistakes. And it's mainly, you know, how do you respond to these things, and how do you correct mistakes? People can grow and change, and, you know, I'm open to hearing more about, you know, what's going on with that.
Okay, Jackie.
I think the performance we're seeing from her and the reason she's standing out shows that she can lead a good team. She's leading a good campaign. People are wanting to work with her. I'm a boss. I have failed as a boss. I can't tell you how many times, but I think that's why I don't take those sorts of critiques of that seriously. I agree, humiliating staff is not acceptable, but I think everybody grows in their role. And I think that she probably has.
Okay. Patty, what do you think?
The first time I heard that she had trouble with her staff was a friend of mine came to visit from Massachusetts, and that was one of her big reservations about Amy. She told me that story, and then I looked into it further. And as many difficult stories there are about her, there are also as many endorsements about her as an employer. So I do think it should be looked into, but I'm reasonably comfortable with what I learned about her and my research about that topic.
And I think really for all of our evaluation, we have to weigh the good and the bad with each candidate. And I think where we end up is really, you know, does the good outweigh the bad? And
right.
I don't disagree with us, with everybody going through their process of being vetted for all of the things that brought them to this point.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's fair enough. And I think that's enough said about that. And listeners, you can Google more if you want to learn more about that issue. On the subject of sort of what she thinks government can do, she has positioned herself for, again, lack of a better phrase, is sort of the adult in the room, that the person who's going to be grounded, who's going to be realistic, who's not going to overpromise. There was a moment in the fall debates in which John Delaney, who was one of the several hundred candidates on the stage at the time, was making sort of a similar kind of sober, hey, let's not overpromise on health care, let's not overpromise on jobs. And Elizabeth Warren, Senator Warren, turned to John Delaney and said, if your whole thing is what we can't do, why are you even running? And, you know, John Delaney has never been heard from again. No one has seen him. I'm mostly kidding, but that was pretty much the end for John Delaney. Amy Klobuchar was sort of saying the same things. And Elizabeth Warren has been critical of this idea of, if you are not ambitious, why are you running? Well, her rejoinder is typically, let's be more realistic. Let's figure out what can get done. How do you see that pragmatism versus the progressive wing, whether it's Elizabeth Warren or Senator Sanders, who's leading the nomination fight right now? How do you see that pragmatism versus ambition, whether it's healthcare, economy, et cetera?
Well, whoever becomes the next president is going to have to be able to get bills and legislation passed. And in order to do that, you've got to be able to present things that will get through and get voted on and get passed. So I think the pragmatic approach probably will bring in more Republicans and more of the moderates, and it has a better chance of succeeding versus things that are a little too far out there for right now. I mean, maybe your goal is something further out there, work toward it, but maybe take smaller steps toward it.
Well, you work in healthcare, and Senator Klobuchar has not been, you know, one of the vocal supporters of, for example, Medicare for All or a different sort of universal system. And she's trying to be, as she says, pragmatic about that. Does that work for you?
Yes, because I think there are a lot of people out there who have their insurance. They're happy with their employer or their private insurance. However they get their insurance, they don't want to be removed from that and then forced to take on a Medicare for All. So I think maybe eventually, you know, you want to go forward and cover more people, and maybe a public option might be a way to go, which has been brought up by some of the candidates. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that I should mention, I don't see patients. I work in a lab with Petri dishes. So, you know, but this is my own opinion is, you know, work towards and get, you know, see what you can get through at this point versus going too far out there and having it die.
No, I hear that. But I also see even the people with insurance, something like 45% of Americans with private insurance now have high deductible plans. And I have said many times, if you have a deductible of $6,000, what you have is catastrophic coverage. You don't really have day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month health care. Because if you have what might be deemed categorically a minor procedure, you might not even want to get it done because you don't want to pay the $6,000 deductible. That is a problem too. And I'm sure Amy Klobuchar would agree with that. But that's one of the reasons that the Warrens of the world and the Sanders of the world are calling for sort of an overhaul. She believes you can tweak within that system and sort of look at the margins and make it work and improve it within the system.
Right. I agree with that approach. Improve it within the system, use what we have, make it better. I think that's probably the way to go, at least in my opinion.
Okay, Jackie, again, as someone who's got to work in politics and figure out what's realistic, you know, some of the fellow Democrats in the field have described her as sort of a wet blanket, the person who says you can't. How do you view it?
Well, I think there's, again, in a polarized environment like this, what do we agree on? What can we get done? And that's how progress can be made. And, you know, one of the most important things that I see that she's put forth she would do is an infrastructure overhaul for, you know, that as being on a village board and trying to, you know, make good decisions of how to take care of our streets and our sewer and our water treatment and all of that. We need the government's help for that. And so any president needs to take that seriously. I actually hoped that this president would do something that we all could agree on.
He talked a lot about infrastructure.
Yeah, and that's what I was looking for. So I want to see her do that. What else do we agree on?
Okay. How do you feel about healthcare and how she views sort of, again, that pragmatic, incremental, improve the ACA, but not necessarily tear the system down approach?
My view on this all along is I'm really grateful for the more left progressive voice in the climate, because it's allowed this to get closer to being done and done better. I think the Affordable Care Act has a lot of room to grow. I've paid for my own insurance for many years, and that helped me to be able to afford health care, but it was still, you know, kind of unaffordable. So we need to improve there. Medicare for All appeals to me. More people should get covered, but can it get done?
She also has been, Senator Klobuchar has been skeptical about sort of waiving or eliminating student loan debt. What do you think about that?
Oh, you know, I just paid mine off literally last month. Yay.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Again, it get to me, promises like that and trying to achieve things like that, I would love to see, you know, everybody get a pony. But can we afford to give everybody a pony? And I don't mean to use, you know, a metaphor like that to make it seem like it's not important, because it is important. But promising so many things and then not really having a path forward to deliver them in an affordable way, that doesn't do anything for me. I'm just too realistic for that.
Okay. Patty, what do you think about this notion that the senator is not ambitious enough and is too limited in her imagination of what is possible?
I just think she's very pragmatic, and I support that. I like what she says about when she talks about the health care issue, that two-thirds of Senate Democrats right now do not support the concept of Medicare for All, and that's Senate Democrats. What about the Republicans? So how are you going to get Medicare for All when even the Democratic Party doesn't support that idea? So let's move ahead with working on the Affordable Care Act, improving it step by step, offering a public health option. One of the focuses that she has as far as the Affordable Care Act is looking at lowering prescription drugs costs and trying to work on big pharma, issues like that. So I support what she's trying to do in that way. And I think the question of if she's not progressive enough, I'm really concerned about getting a Democrat elected. I think that we really have to look at kitchen table issues and ways to get a Democrat in the presidency.
Let me get back to your phone calls, because we have a lot of feedback. I'm going to start with Maggie in Rochester. Go ahead, Maggie.
Hey, I'm listening in, and I'm just a little bit concerned about this idea and to be clear, I don't hate Amy. I think that in terms of centrist candidates, she's fine. But I'm concerned about the idea that the reason that we should vote for a centrist is that they'll somehow be better able to achieve bipartisan legislation, or that they'll be able to operate in a bipartisan way. What we've seen over the last 10 years is that if the Senate or the House remain Republican-controlled, they will obstruct or refuse to cooperate with the Democratic president on principle. And so, I mean, if anything, what I saw with Obama was that he was overly conciliatory in some ways, and the Republicans simply refused to work with him on principle. And so I think this idea that somehow, like, we need to have kitchen table issues and we need to be more centrist, it just doesn't seem like in the political environment that we're in, that's a realistic hope, even if the person were to get elected. And it seems like it undercuts our hopes for a progressive candidate that can actually try to push for the issues that many of us who are Democrats or even further left want. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, Maggie, thank you for the phone call. So to kind of elaborate on that, I mean, this is where I think Maggie's point is a fair one, and I'd like our guests to kind of weigh in. When we think about, and when we mentioned this last hour, when we think about President Obama wanting to take the top marginal tax rate from 37 to 39%, he was decried as a socialist for wanting to move the top marginal rates 2 basis points by Republicans. Now you have an actual Democratic socialist, and imagine they're in the White House. If the argument is, well, no, Republicans would work with a lot of people, just not a Democratic socialist, they called a centrist like Obama a socialist for wanting to move the top marginal rate 2 points. So Maggie's point is, it doesn't matter who you are. They're going to call you a socialist, probably a communist, and they will do nothing to work with you. And Jackie, you've been strong on this notion of working across the aisle and understanding people. And Maggie's saying, that's nice. They ain't going to do that if she's in office. They ain't going to do it with anybody in office. What do you think?
Well, I think it gets that my answer to that goes to my earlier point about, you know, I think it's great that there's such a strong debate about how to handle the disparity in this nation. I agree, actually, with the problems that need to be solved. But the only way to get the problem solved is to have people on both sides of the issues come up with a solution. I mean, you bring up the Medicare for All, and we bring up the student loan forgiveness and all of that. What's really the problem? The government needs to work together to bring those costs down so that people can afford it with the wages that they can earn. And yes, wages need to come up, but you can't just wave a magic wand and get these things passed. And yes, to the caller's point, yeah, the government isn't functioning well. You know, a president and a party should be able to work together and get things done. And yet for 40 years, it feels like that's just not the way it is. And whether you're Obama, you're a socialist, or whether you're Bernie, you're a socialist. So I agree with what she's saying. I can only put my support toward a candidate who appeals to me and what I'm comfortable with. And that's where I stand.
Okay. Patty, what do you think?
Honestly, my biggest concern, like I was saying before, is I don't think that Bernie Sanders can get elected. I think that he is that progressive. So I'm kind of falling back to the idea of let's get a Democrat in the presidency and let's go from there.
No, I have made a few predictions in politics and in sports and in life over the last 5 years. Turns out all of them were wrong.
Right.
I was the guy who said Marco Rubio was going to be the Republican nominee, that Trump had a ceiling, that Mitt Romney would never vote to convict. All of these things, I'm always wrong. So what I've learned is if I don't sort of understand a trend, I'm going to try to be a little more humble about it. And when you actually look at polling, Bernie Sanders is one of the most popular American politicians we've seen in decades. Now, that doesn't mean he's not going to have his opposition. He will have opposition. But he polls very well just in terms of general popularity and for passionate popularity. You don't think he can win, though?
I think he does really well with his party, with the Democrats. But as far as the general population of people, I don't think he can win.
Okay. Dr. Siegel.
Well, I think as far as you're talking about Bernie now.
Generally, this notion of what is electable and what's feasible and piggybacking off Maggie's phone call, whether it's worth trying to compromise in this climate.
I feel like obstructionists are going to obstruct. They'll obstruct whoever ends up being the president.
That's what Maggie's saying.
Right, exactly. And I agree with that. But maybe there's a better chance of getting through that obstruction if the people are a little bit closer together, you know. Bringing people together that, you know, maybe a moderate Republican might agree, you know, a little bit with what's going on rather than having it be so polarized. Mm-hmm. If you're a little more to the middle, you might attract, you have a chance at least of breaking through the obstruction.
Okay.
Well, theoretically, you know, it's not just the presidency that has to change to make things get done, whether you, again, are asking for what Bernie wants or what Warren wants or what anybody wants. But when we have this election, there's going to be down ticket candidates that are going to be be affected by the tone of the whole conversation. And so that would be an argument, you know, Republicans need to be replaced with Republicans that want to deal, and Democrats need to be elected to make deals, you know, so that has to happen all the way up and down the board. It's not, and that's where I think that's why it's a pragmatic decision versus an extreme decision.
Peter in Brighton on the phone says he knows Amy personally. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
So I grew up in Rochester, Minnesota, and I met Amy when I was a teenager, and our fathers knew each other. And I left Minnesota for a long time and returned back, and I reconnected with her just during her first campaign for Senate. It's interesting. I had a fair amount of interaction with her during that campaign and supported her very much. And it's interesting listening to all the people on your panel today who are newcomers to Amy Klobuchar. Everything you're talking about, I agree with, but I'm way past that point with her having known her. And I think people are just discovering, and the fact that she's surging in the polls right now is not a surprise to me in that they're starting to understand who she is, that she's a very pragmatic candidate. She knows the issues very well. And on a personal level, I will tell you that she's the kind of person who, when you're talking to her, she listens to you and really tries to understand your issue and where you're coming from. And I think a lot of that pragmatism that people associate with her comes from that. Plus, we're the same age. We grew up in a similar environment. She's, from my perspective, a Minnesotan through and through that only another Minnesotan can understand. She's got an unbelievable sense of humor. And I'm not surprised that people are starting to discover her. And as they get to know her better, they'll understand that she's never lost an election. Her first Senate campaign, she won with 68% of the vote or something like that. And so she just has a really natural ability to connect with people on a human level. And once you get to know her, it's very easy to support her because she is a moderate. And from my perspective, anyways, regardless of what her positions are, I agree with most of them. But as a person, she is the type of person that I can relate to very deeply and understand. And having known her personally, I have no problem. I'm not surprised seeing the surge, and I think she'd make a great president.
Peter, before I let you go, when you think about Klobuchar as a moderate, I mean, you use that term. A lot of people who are writing the program are expressing support or at least admiration for her as a centrist. For the people who are hurting the most in our society, and we have got a lot of economic inequality, there seems to be suspicion that moderate just means more of the same, just in a slightly different flavor. Do you see it that way?
Not with her, no. I think she gets it from the progressive side. But you also have to get things done, right? I mean, I think that her approach to this is, you know, I understand and I empathize with it, and that's the North Star. We have to go that way to help people as best we can. But considering the political environment, she's a realist where this is concerned. You know, she's going to accomplish as much as she possibly can, but by taking and mapping out an extreme position like some candidates on both sides, you're never going to accomplish anything. So I think that, I think she gets that. But again, like I said, a lot of people are hurting. I'm pretty sure she understands that. And I think that her approach would be to move the ball as far as she can, and she could move it further as with her style and her pragmatism than I think a more extreme candidate could do. Just my opinion.
Peter, thanks for the phone call. And a lot of feedback on Amy Klobuchar, centrist candidates, and in just the last 5 minutes, a flood of people pointing me to a story just out on the Democrat and Chronicles website. Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren, wading into presidential politics, announced her endorsement today of Michael Bloomberg. The mayor of Rochester says she's aware of his record, and as we talked about just yesterday, on this program, Mayor Bloomberg has made remarks about stop and frisk. He defended it for years. He actually said that he thought there were too many white people stopped and searched, and there weren't enough people of color stopped and searched. He recently walked back those remarks and said it was a mistake. Now, Rochester is one of 12 U.S. cities selected to participate in the $45 million expansion of Bloomberg Philanthropy's Innovation Teams program. I just wanted to, that's in 2014, but just wanted to mention that critics like Anand Giridharadas have been pointing out that the Bloomberg campaign has been leveraging some of their connections to look for endorsements. Does that mean that's why Rochester's mayor has endorsed him? I cannot possibly make that conclusion, and we'd love to talk to the mayor herself about it. But a lot of interest, at least, from Mayor Warren to our guests in studio to some people writing and calling the program about centrist candidates, people who can beat Trump. Who is that person? Can there be consolidation? After our only break of the hour, we're going to talk about a few more issues with Senator Amy Klobuchar. Do our guests think there's enough time to build the infrastructure and consolidate and sort of pare the field down? Because if you want to look at a centrist lane, Biden, Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, there's still a lot, and now Michael Bloomberg, there's still a lot there. So can Amy Klobuchar be that person in time to win states? And we'll also talk about some of the issues that the critics say need to be discussed about her record as well. Let's do that, and we'll come right back on Connections.
I'm Megan Mack. Friday on The Next Connections, we talk about adult mentoring relationships that were part of the Rochester Anti-Poverty Initiatives program. Local leaders say those relationships have been successful, so we'll hear about the results and the impact of the program from some of its participants. Then in our second hour, a play at the Multi-Use Community Cultural Center is exploring issues of race. We'll talk about Blues for Mr. Charlie by James Baldwin. Talk to you Friday.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Panelists explaining their support for Senator Amy Klobuchar's presidential bid. We have Patty Kapteen, Dr. Gail Siegel, Jackie Billings, all with us in studio, and a lot of your feedback has been coming in this hour. Before we get to more of that, I want to listen to a clip that's been passed around a lot in the last few weeks, and it's about some of the comments Amy Klobuchar made the first time she ran for the U.S. Senate. This is back in 2006. As Patty pointed out, she won big in that race, but in that race, she was talking about on this video clip during a debate, comments she made about the need for heightened border security, including the construction of, in her words, a fence between the U.S. and Mexico. And let's listen to some of those remarks.
I do believe that we need more resources at the border and that that includes a fence. What we have now, we have people waiting to come in legally. Thousands of people waiting to come in legally to this country, and we have people coming in illegally. That's not right. We need to get order at the border. But we also have to stop giving amnesty to companies that are hiring illegal immigrants. Under this administration, the number of prosecutions of companies has gone way down. That has to change. Then finally, I believe that we need to give people who have been in this country for a number of years, who are willing to pay their taxes, who are willing to learn English, who are willing to pay the fines, the chance for earned citizenship. Nothing has happened for the last 6 years on this issue. It has been all talk, and that has to change. We need to get some action.
That is then-candidate Amy Klobuchar in 2006 when she was running for U.S. Senate. Her campaign, and she has made clear, she does not support a border wall. She mentioned in that clip that she would support a border fence, but now says she does not. Anything there, Dr. Siegel, concern you about her?
You know, I think a lot of us, most of us, would agree that we want to have border security. But wanting border security isn't the same as wanting a fence that, you know, a wall covering the entire length of the border and such harsh and strict policies that the Trump administration has put forward. You know, there is fencing now. There are fences in some places, and, you know, that's fine. I really definitely agree that there should be border security. But to, you know, go to the other extreme and have these cement structures built and, you know, the whole attitude towards immigration and immigrants is very distasteful with the president that we have now. So I think border security is fine, but, you know, let's have a heart. Let's have some empathy for the people that are trying so hard to make a life in the United States.
Okay. Jackie Billings, any concerns about those remarks?
They sound like remarks that make sense 14 years ago to a person who has decided to throw her hat in the ring and get into federal government and try to be part of the solution. 14 years later, with what she's learned, now if you look at her website, it's more specific. It's it has real solutions, and that gets back to my whole desire. This government has to start working together to solve these problems. This immigration issue going unsolved for so long, people are not going to stop wanting to come here. They want to support their families, and people in America need people to run their businesses, to work in their businesses. So the problems are there. We need a solution.
Okay. Patty, any concerns there?
Well, I think there's a big difference between having concerns about illegal immigration, which I do think has been a longstanding problem that many candidates, many presidents have tried to tackle. I think, for example, Barack Obama was pretty tough on illegal immigration. There's a big difference between trying to tackle the issue and using immigrants as scapegoats in the kind of demagogue fashion that I think Donald Trump uses. So I think that, like many other candidates, Amy Klobuchar's views on illegal immigration have developed over the years. She's made some changes, like many politicians would, and so I'm comfortable with where she stands now.
An email from a listener named Andrew says, Kamala Harris was understandably given a rough treatment over her record as a prosecutor. Where is the same scrutiny for Amy Klobuchar? He's referring to this story from the Associated Press, and I'll read now. The Minneapolis NAACP and Black Lives Matter call on Amy Klobuchar to suspend her presidential campaign. She's being called to suspend that campaign after the AP story published recently offering a critical account of her handling of a case when she was Hennepin County's district attorney. As the DA, Klobuchar led the case against Mayon Burrell, who was a teenager at the time and was sentenced to life in prison for the 2002 murder of 11-year-old Taisha Edwards. The AP story revealed that Klobuchar prosecuted Burrell, who's now 33, despite there being little evidence, and even though his co-defendant confessed to the crime and said Burrell wasn't even there. Though Klobuchar, excuse me, too much reading this week. $500 a year, everybody. Once in a while,
You're going to have this. We're going to come back to this in just a second while I get more water. Before, as I return to this, I'm not sick. I'm not working sick. Any concerns about these kind of stories, about her prosecutorial record to begin with, Dr. Siegel?
Actually, I think Patty has done a lot of homework on this, right? You have some information there about...
Yeah, Patty, go ahead.
Well, so Amy Klobuchar took over as a prosecutor in a very large district in Minnesota. And at the time that she took over, there was a really, really, really serious issue around crime in her county that she was, where she was the prosecutor. And so she took a tough stance on crime. And at the same time, while a prosecutor, she took on this program called the Innocence Project, which was designed to prevent wrongful convictions. And so I think there was a balance in what she did, and she was also operating in a particular context in Minnesota at the time. I do think that in the past several years, she's been very involved in legislation to support wrongful convictions and lowering recidivism rates. For example, she was very involved in the First Step Act, which is legislation that was just recently passed, I believe, in December, to kind of reduce recidivism rates and to address these issues.
So there's enough there, though, that you feel it's sort of asked and answered, that you're comfortable with her position then?
I think she does have to explain. She has more to explain. She definitely has more to explain.
It's fair to look at her prosecutorial.
It's fair to look at her background.
And just finishing up the story there. So this 11-year-old Taisha Edwards was murdered. Mayon Burrell goes to prison for life. And she claimed he was a threat to society. She wanted to deny his request even to attend his own mother's funeral. Leslie Redmond, president of the Minneapolis NAACP, said in a news conference, quote, "This is about justice. This isn't just a situation that happened to the Central Park Five alone. This is a situation that happens all around America. This is a situation that happens right here in Minnesota. Young people, young adults were given life sentences to rot away in prison. This benefits no one. However, it does benefit politicians who use the criminal justice system to benefit their own careers, and enough is enough." Interestingly enough, the father of Taisha Edwards believes that Mayon Burrell probably didn't do it. So you have this case, very, very sensitive case, and the Minneapolis NAACP says, right now, let's take a look at this and suspend your campaign for the moment. Jackie, does that worry you?
Oh, sure. To what Patty said, you know, I mean, her record deserves to be scrutinized. We'll learn more and more all the time about her judgment in the past, and have to weigh that and weigh those facts. Period.
Okay, so fair to look at these issues.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Let me just kind of work through a lot more feedback as much as we can. Mary says, in Aurora, Mary says, "I'm a Democrat, but only to move Bernie forward. I am not alone. If he is undermined by the Democratic Party again this time, I expect Bernie to run as an independent. I'm tired of Democrats picking their choice and ignoring the voters. They are as bad as the Republicans, and we need to listen to the young people that have to inherit the mess they are facing now." That's from Mary in Aurora. Strong words. Now, when she says Democrats picking their choice, I think she means the DNC. I don't think she means Democratic voters. I don't think Mary's saying don't let people vote. She feels that Sanders is going to be the voter's choice, and she's worried that he's going to be undermined. You worried about that, Dr. Siegel?
No, I'm not. I think, you know, the voters will decide. We're going to have primaries, and we're going to find out. I plan to vote on for whoever is the Democratic nominee. If it's Sanders, I will be voting for him. If it's a wet paper towel, I'll be voting for them, whatever, however it turns out. But Bernie, he's got a shot. He's doing really well. So I don't see him being undermined right now.
Okay. Jackie, you know, again, having experience in politics, here's what the thing that I think is being hinted at by emails like this. There's this view, given the delegate allocation process, that there could be a contested convention. In other words, nobody shows up with the majority of delegates to win the nomination. Sanders is very likely to have the most, even if it's a plurality. It's hard for me to imagine a scenario where the person who gets the most delegates, majority or not, doesn't get the nomination. What do you think?
Correct. I agree. Sanders wins. He should win. That's how that should go. And I don't. I would. I I would not be supportive of the Democrat Party playing kingmaker here. I don't think that's appropriate. I mean, obviously, through the whole history of our country, you know, as Americans get the right to vote and make decisions, sometimes the public votes for people that the establishment doesn't like. And that's just got to be allowed to continue because that's what's fair.
Now, you also know something about sort of the work to build infrastructure, to build campaigns. And the Klobuchar campaign's been a little bit behind. Bloomberg campaign's behind, but they've got hundreds of millions of dollars that they've already spent. Are you concerned that if she gains some support, which she seems to be gaining, there's more conversation about her, she's got to win some states, but then is the infrastructure there to make the movement happen? Are you worried about that?
Sure, but there's nothing to be done about it at this point.
Work hard, work fast?
Yeah, do your best. That's what needs to happen. You need money to play this game, and you need a lot of it. And if she doesn't have it and can't hire the people to get the vote out and can't run all these commercials, well, then that's what happens.
Now, though, to Jackie's point there, money comes in fast, though, when there is momentum at this stage. It is interesting to see how fast that can turn. Can you get a ground operation up there? Patty, do you think there's enough time for this campaign to get going?
Well, I think she definitely has a challenge when it comes to the question of infrastructure in Nevada and in South Carolina. And then soon after that, on March 3rd, you've got one-third of the delegates coming in.
Yep.
So it's a challenge. And I am hoping that she is using the momentum from Iowa and New Hampshire and her performances there to raise as much money as possible and to use that money to get the infrastructure up in these key areas.
Susan says the following. Thanks for the show today. I came back from the Susan B. Anthony dinner last night inspired. I headed right to my computer, and I made my first contribution to Amy Klobuchar. Her pragmatic approach is what we need. She seems to be gaining her confidence now, and I think she can go toe-to-toe against Trump. That's from Susan. Kathy in Rochester with a different view. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hey, Evan. I think that we did this in 2016. I think we ran a centrist and Trump won, and I think that we have to break this cycle. You have these Republican presidents coming in, destroying everything, leaving a mess, like Bush, like Trump, and then you have a Democrat coming in that's going to pick up the pieces, and it takes the whole term, and then you have people with short memories putting a Republican back in. And I think the only way to change this cycle is to get a progressive in there and change the underlying problems.
Kathy, so let me read an email I got that sort of takes a different view, and I want to get your take if I could, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you're making an important point here, because Hillary Clinton, by most Democratic Party measures today, was a centrist candidate, and she did not win. Jay writes the following. If you just look at the numbers in New Hampshire, this is the weakest win by a New Hampshire winner in the last 50 years. Just think about the enormous lead Bernie started with over Pete and Amy in name recognition and finances, and he's from a bordering state. So this is not the win Bernie really needed. There are reports that the youth vote is down too, which surprises nobody who follow politics closely. The youth vote is almost always down, and among first-time voters so far, Bernie is behind Pete Buttigieg. It's possible that Bernie will pick up more steam in the next month. It's also possible that Biden wins big in South Carolina undeterred, yet it's perhaps most likely that 65% of Democrats will consolidate around someone. Buttigieg, Klobuchar, someone else, sometime between South Carolina and Pennsylvania. That's from Jay, and he goes on to essentially say, Klobuchar has done the best in the reddest parts of the country that you're going to have to win. Does that change it at all? Essentially saying, he's saying she's not Hillary Clinton. What do you think?
So I've been an independent for 50 years. I'm not affiliated with either party, and I think there's a lot of people that are doing what I'm doing right now. I'm sitting it out. I will vote for whoever is the nominee, but I think that if you just put a moderate in there, you're just going through the same cycle again. There's a really good article coming out in the March Atlantic about the middle class and affordability, and I think that none of these moderates can really speak to making the changes needed to this system so that the people are going to change their minds.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Some final remarks on that. Dr. Siegel, go ahead.
Right. Speaking about Hillary, although she lost the Electoral College, she did win the popular vote by 3 million votes. And, you know, so she did really well. It was a difference of 70,000 votes in a couple of states.
About three states, yeah.
Right. So she did really well. Unfortunately, she had a lot of headwind, you know, between the Russians and the WikiLeaks and all that stuff. So, you know, I think a centrist
and her decision not to go to certain states.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were missteps also, sure. But I mean, there was a lot going on then, and I don't think that means automatically that a centrist can't pull it together.
Okay, Jackie, final thoughts. Go ahead.
I think it's an oversimplification to say Hillary lost, so would a moderate. My neighbors, the people that I talk to on a regular basis, are so far away from this left side of this conversation, and they're not going to. I mean, whether that matters or not, that's up to the electorate to decide.
Okay, Patty, final thoughts.
I agree with Jackie. I think that Amy Klobuchar is her own candidate. She's not Hillary. I think Hillary did do great, but I think that we have to look at Amy as herself. She's from Minnesota. She's from one of those critical electoral college states and areas of the country.
I want to thank all of our guests for being here. That's Patty Kemp, team. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Nice talking to you this hour. Jackie Billings, who's a restaurant entrepreneur and a trustee in the Village of Perry. Thanks for making the trip up.
Thank you, Evan.
And our thanks to Dr. Gail Siegel, who's the SUNY Buffalo Research Lab Director and a founding member of the Rochester March for Science. Thank you for making the time.
Thank you very much.
And a big group of people helping out today. Thanks, Josephine, for the great work every Thursday. Rob Braden is the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and I hope that you are a member of member-supported public radio, because we don't exist without the members. And that can be you today if you call 454-6300. Please do it. Less than 2 days left in our winter membership campaign at 454-6300. Thanks. Talk to you tomorrow.